substantively from the government about who was responsible for those murders until after the Boston Marathon bombings. About a week after the bombings, ABC News published a report by Michelle McPhee, a Boston-based reporter, containing anonymous law enforcement sources' allegations that, in fact, Temerlin Tsarnaev, the then newly deceased accused Boston bomber, was responsible for those murders. It was a bombshell. This news was huge in the Boston area. These murders that had been unsolved for nearly 2 years suddenly were pinned on a man who had, you know, was the most notorious figure in maybe the history of Boston, recently deceased. Now, the reason that Todashev, the young man who was killed by an FBI agent in Florida, is connected to this is because just weeks after that initial story in ABC News, we woke up to more shocking news here in Boston, which is that the FBI, along with two Massachusetts state troopers, had traveled down to Florida to interview this young man, who was reportedly a friend of Tamerlan's, about his connection to those Waltham murders. And we were told that overnight, during this highly unusual interrogation in Ibrahim Todashev's home,
we have 20 seconds.
The FBI killed him, basically. The strange thing is that in the wake of those murders, even after saying that the FBI had forensic evidence linking Tamerlan to the crime scene in Waltham, in court last year, the DOJ told the public defenders, in fact, we have no evidence linking Tamerlan to those crimes.
We're going to have to leave it there, but we'll continue to follow all these cases. Cade Crockford is the Director of Technology for Liberty Project at the ACLU of Massachusetts. That does it for the broadcast. We have a job opening here, a part-time camera operator in New York City. Check out our website. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We'll be in Alabama this weekend.
And now, we're not live in Alabama. This is WHFR Dearborn, live from Henry Ford College. This is the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show. And here's our theme song, just to get things started. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. It's our local public affairs show where we deal with issues and opinions that have to do with Dearborn and the surrounding areas. Things that matter to you most because they're right next door. So we're going to begin digging deeper here with update stories from Dearborn Press and Guide, Times Herald, and many other sources. I'm joined, my name, by the way, is Jay Koronek. I'm the station advisor here at WHFR, as well as host of the show, along with John Conroy, who is our WHFR news director. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Jay. It's good to be here.
Okay. Yeah, I always say it's good to be anywhere, but after a certain age, you know,
be thankful for every breath you take.
Ooh. It's daylight. I open my eyes and I see daylight. Whoopee! Anyway, a lot of stories here. Last week we did have, for 36 minutes, we did have the State of the City address. And if you missed that, it is on our website, the audio only, slightly edited one. It's a little bit shorter because then the video that's on the cityofdearborn.org website, because we cut off the introductions. Because that's not the content of the speech. And no disrespect to all the wonderful elected leaders and important people of Dearborn who attended. Well, as many as could get in the room, since it was only a very small room. And the public, even though they could have attended, we and other press media were told, don't invite them. Don't publicize it, because we don't have room for the city. So anyway, if you missed that for one reason or another, hey, it's still available, cityofdearborn.org on their website. They have the video of that, and we have the audio as part of our WHFR Journal from last Friday, which was March the 27th. So you go to whfr.fm, you click on the button in the middle of the homepage, which says talk shows, and then you choose WHFR Journal, and then you select February 27th. And you can download it, or you can play it directly from the website. It works on all platforms, as they say. So a few stories we couldn't get in, and just looking chronologically here, I'll go start going down my list. Dearborn Heights District 7 had a school bond vote a week or so ago, and voters rejected it. Well, at least a majority did anyway. Out of about 700 votes, it lost by 40 votes. And again, I don't know how many registered voters are in District Heights, Dearborn Heights District 7. Again, that's not the whole city of District of Dearborn Heights. I understand they have seven whole school districts there, which I don't quite understand. But Dearborn has actually two. Okay. Yeah, that's most people don't know that. We have actually two school districts that are part of the Dearborn Public Schools district. But their so-called District 7 voters, this was a supplemental bond, which would be paid for by millage. And it actually was rather high, John. It was, I think they worked it out for an average home value in Dearborn Heights. It'd be an additional, I think it was $85 a year for this. Mm-hmm. So that is, that's a chunk of change. But what were the reasons for it? Well, security. They wanted better video monitors and door locks and ways to prevent unauthorized people from having such easy access that most schools have. That didn't seem to be a reason for a majority to vote for it. And then there was also the fact that their technology is kind of old. Their computers, they haven't had a technology upgrade millage for almost 15 or more years now. Wow. So I'm thinking, what kind of computers do they have? Yeah. Do they have an IBM from the days that IBM used to make computers? Do they have 5 1/4-inch floppy disk drives? my joke is, of course, that President Obama, in the last year, appointed a Massachusetts Institute of Technology person, very smart woman who knows information systems, computers, for those that want it spelled out for them. That's COMPUTER. Okay. And she said, my primary goal here as the new technology advisor for the operation of the White House is to get rid of floppy disks used here in the White House. So even the White House, the head of our, the center of our president and all of his operations and advisors, they still have, I hope not all of them, but some of them have floppy disk drives on their machines. Oh my gosh. OMG, OMG, OMG. And I'm glad I explained what that was for those of you who don't know what those terms mean. Okay. So would I have voted for it? And I can't tell you how to vote because that's against our rules here at WHFR, and even FCC doesn't allow us to do editorials, believe it or not, because we're non-commercial. And for some reason, they don't trust non-commercial stations of having a legitimate editorial purpose. And I don't know why. But commercial stations can do it, but they're too afraid to do it because they're afraid of alienating any listener. The commercial stations 50 years ago, I know, and I used to watch them in Detroit here when I was very small, they used to advise, you know, who are the better candidates to vote for? How should you vote on a ballot proposal and so on for president and so on? But they found that if people didn't like their editorial position, they might stop watching their station.
Or possibly turning off a few sponsors.
Yes, yes, that's true too. Even sponsors would say, well, there was not as many people watching our commercial because you just disenfranchised them by holding a grudge against your whoever you recommended there. So they stopped doing it, but we can't do it. But we do try to present all kinds of opinions and ideas to let you decide, of course. And I would have voted for that. It seems obvious they're in desperate need in District 7, although $85 a person at a household seems expensive for this upgrade. But that's because there's not many people in that district. That's one of those situations where they need to be part of a larger district so that when they need to upgrade things, it won't cost as much per person, per household. Okay. Now, there's other reasons why I don't believe in massive centralization of schools. I'd like to see as many local school buildings and local control of those buildings, you know, every couple neighborhoods. I love that idea, and I think that's very responsible, where a neighborhood association can actually have major impact on the operation of their local school. But so we're not talking about that here, folks. So whatever. The District 7 Board of Ed said, well, we don't know what we're going to do now. We just can't make those changes. And we're not sure if we're going to go to the voters again. Well, I feel real sorry for the students of that district. And it lost by only 40 votes, as we said, out of 700 cast. In Dearborn, Times-Herald reported that our Dearborn Mayor O'Reilly and the city clerk. Okay, I should mention her name. I'll grab it here. I know her name. Sure I do. Kathy Buda. How soon we forget. They had salary increases. Mayor O'Reilly, his salary will go from $131,000 to $137,000 in 2015. So looking at my percentages, that's about 4% raise, a little bit over 4%, I think. Kathy Buda's salary as city clerk, it will go up from a little bit less than $73,000 to a little bit over $76,000. So again, it's probably the same percent. And that was proposed by the Local Officials Compensation Commission of the City of Dearborn. And who gets appointed to that commission? People from Dearborn.
People from Dearborn.
And who appoints them? The mayor. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. By the way, their quote here is that this commission said the mayor was fine with his current salary, while the clerk told the subcommittees that she was looking for a slight increase. So
they both got.
But if you got appointed to that commission by the mayor,
you would want to.
Does that commission get paid, by the way? I don't think so.
Probably not.
They held three meetings, and of course, they do get paid per meeting. They held 70 up to 70 meetings per calendar year. They only held three meetings so far this year, though, and the stipend pay for them is going to increase, so they get paid a little more, from $93 to $100 per meeting.
There you go.
And if they have the full 70 meetings per year, that for whatever reasons that they're allowed, that would mean they make $7,000 a year on that. Okay, now we go to something that's just breaks my heart, but the deer cull, that is killing of deers at the University of Michigan Dearborn Campus Forest, also known as the Henry Ford Estate Forest, which is now actually, it's a question here, is the forest part of University of Michigan Dearborn? I know the estate is back under the control of Edsel Ford and his family, and that they've made many changes and, you know, to get better for visitors and so on. So, but the grounds, who takes care of the grounds? Well, I think the forest is still under the control of U of M Dearborn. And several weeks back, I mentioned on the show that U of MD had proposed killing some of the deer because the deer were, well, some of them might starve, but also they are eating vegetation, beautiful trees and plants that that might be endangered, might go extinct in that foresty type area if the deers aren't reduced in number. And they had experts that said the 76 deer that they identified there should be reduced to as few as perhaps 10 or 15. That's what they said. And it did happen. And the result is, I had the story here. They killed 34. It's in the Dearborn Press and Guide from this Wednesday. They actually only killed, I say only, they killed 34. So there was still about 20 or 25 left. Well, if they started with 76 and they killed 34, I can do the math on that. That's 42 left. Isn't that right?
That sounds like the right number. Yep.
Yeah. It says that they're likely to have 42. Oh, that's right. That they hope to reduce the number to about 20 or 25. And so I guess the deer were just too fast for them, or the hunters weren't very good. I thought it was also indelicate that when the story originally came up, U of MD said the hunters would just start shooting whichever deer they could find first. So there wasn't any idea to kill the old and infirm, but, you know, kill the babies, kill the females, whoever you find, you know, whoever jumps out in front of you first, just blast them. And I'm being indelicate about it because, as I pointed out in that show, and maybe other people don't have the consciousness about this, but who caused those deers to be there? We did, by ever encroaching on the natural world. And you said, well, that's like hundreds of years ago. Yes, but isn't it still our responsibility? And even the fact that apparently the deers were taken someplace and slaughtered by butchers and the meat was given to poor people to eat. Deer meat for dinner, honey. I'd rather go out to a Burger King, you know. Well, I'm just saying, it's nice that apparently, you know, we don't know for sure, but that's what they said would happen, is that the meat would be provided for free to, well, either homeless shelters or to hungry people in this area. And I know a few of you hunters usually say, yeah, but they were starved to death anyway. Still, why would they have starved to death? It because the forest is too small. That's what happened. We did it to them. And I proposed then, and John just heard my proposal today, thought it was a good idea, right, John? Is that why don't we just send hunters out there with tranquilizing darts? Okay, takes a bigger operation, costs more money, but does it really cost as much? I mean, they have to take the carcasses away with big trucks.
They still have to move them.
Of course, they can stack them all up in a little van, maybe, all 34 of them. But here they would put them in larger flatbed vehicles, and I think they should take them up north and release them in a state park. And of course, the same problem might happen. They might starve there, or if they wander out, they'll get shot. But John, you had a little follow-up. You live in Grosse Isle.
Yeah.
And you have deer there.
And downriver, you know, has had a problem with deer. And they also call the herd, but they do it in a fashion that is away from any other folks so that there's no danger of anybody getting hurt.
Well, right, yeah.
As far as that goes.
But you said that there's actually deer on Grosse Isle that wander through the neighborhoods.
Well, yes.
You don't have a forest per se, or it's just all kind of semi-wooded?
Well, there are woods, but we have a problem when the deer come in the backyards of people and eat up all their vegetables and flowers and plants. And then the traffic problem is another problem, where they run on the roads. There's especially at night, you don't see them. And there's a number of deer car accidents, and they hit when that deer hits your car, you know it's hit.
Oh yeah, so, I was on I-94 a couple decades ago, but it was just an off road. I was going into one of the cities just off 94 out in the western part of the state, and just pulled off onto the road going into the town, and a deer jumped out, and actually two deer. And the last one wasn't quite quick enough, and I swerved, but I hit my fender. I think he did limp away, so I don't think I killed him, but my car fender had to be replaced. But nonetheless, I thought that was terrible. But it was my fault because I was the one that had the cars. My species put the roads there through their forest. It's our fault, and I just think there ought to be a more humane approach to this. When I go up north, I see huge forests, huge areas of trees, solid trees. We don't see that in this area. Just if you want to amaze yourself, folks, get out of the Detroit area and drive up north a little bit and get off the expressways a little bit and see how many huge areas of, I use a fancy word, contiguous trees, one after the other, all over the place. And there's got to be room for a few more deer one place or the other up there. And I know that we have hunting season and they kill deers because supposedly some would starve anyway. But in that case, the hunters get to keep the meat for themselves. And it's a great sport, too. Killing is such a great sport. We love it, don't we, as humans? Well, I just feel really badly, although I guess I'm glad that I only got 34. And I wish the best to the other 42. That are left. There are other ways we could handle this, folks, and that's one of the alternative ideas we try to give you on this show. Anything that maybe isn't out there in the mainstream that you might want to consider and you might want to recommend to your elected representatives. Okay.
And, of course, remembering that the views expressed by our hosts are not necessarily the views of WHFR or Henry Ford College.
That's right. It's only the host or whatever op-ed piece we're reading at the time. Well, you mentioned there's another problem, though, in Gros Isle, is that people are feeding the deer.
Oh, yeah.
Now, people in the forested area here that U of MD has, I don't think they're supposed to feed the animals. And that would encourage them in the worst ways to grow more and overpopulate, even eat bad food and get sick from it too.
Spread of disease.
Give them a little
little
sugar candy. Well, they love sugar candy. I understand most all animals do love sugar, but they get too much of it and it's bad for them, just like us. Okay.
Well, I had a deer born in my backyard this past winter, so there's a
born.
We had a deer.
Wow.
In our little patch of vegetation from the previous fall.
Ah.
And bedded down. And
if they needed a snack during birth, they could.
There you go. And then had a baby and grew up right there.
Wow. That's cool, I guess. So there wasn't any hunters that came down to shoot them right after they were born?
Not there, no.
Okay.
No.
That's good. Dave Kinesick, who was a new Michigan senator, that is a senator to the state of Michigan, Dave Kinesick from Dearborn Heights, real go-getter. He's had a lot of press releases, I'll tell you, because I watch for these things, and he's got a lot of initiatives. He's got almost a whole page of the Press and Guide this week about how he's introducing a bill that he hopes will be bipartisan. He does have support from some Republicans that would make it legal for provisioning centers, better known as dispensaries, of medical marijuana to operate around the state a little more efficiently, a little more safely. And as long as medical marijuana uses are legal in Michigan, approved by the voters in 2008. However, due to language in that same law, selling and possessing of marijuana is still technically illegal. So if a police stop you in your car and you have marijuana on you, then it's a real hassle to show, I guess, your license or your doctor's prescription or whatever. Or you can be jailed just because you have it, even though it's legal to use it, it's legal to get it. So hopefully that can be cleaned up. Even Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette has issued opinions because of the lack of laws outlawing legality of a dispensary, that they are all illegal. So Kinesick hopes his bill will straighten that out. And since there is totally valid 100% good reasons why at least certain people who need it for medical reasons should have marijuana in Michigan, we need to straighten this language out. So good for Dave for getting that started. And I hope we can have him on the Journal here sometime in the near future. We had him when he was campaigning to be state rep in Garden City area, which he won, and now he's moved on before he even finished. Well, after one term as a state rep, he's whoop-de-doo, he's now a state senator. So that's what happens in politics. Okay. Oh, many other stories. Don't stare at the paper. Look at your list here, Koronek. All right. Okay, what about Proposal 1? Well, I just want to say that if you want to read more about it, in May, May 3rd?
May 5th.
First Tuesday in May. Okay, folks, we can look this one up. It's May 5th.
All right.
There's going to be an election in Michigan, special election, costing special money to everybody in the state of Michigan. I forget how much, but it's not cheap, folks. And the only issue is, shall the Michigan State Constitution have a raise in sales tax from 6% to 7%? Okay, yes or no. However, what will that money go for? Well, there's a lot of different things. Okay, yes, it's supposed to give some money each year to fixing the roads and the bridges. But some people have said it's not enough money going to that purpose. Some money, much smaller amount, is going to our schools across the state for upgrades and help in all kinds of ways. And everybody knows that's needed. And money is going elsewhere, too, for all kinds of other things, four or five things. So I don't usually thank him, but thanks to James Holman of the Mackinac Center, or Mackinac Center for Public Policy Study, a very conservative think tank. You know, that's where you only think conservatively to solve problems, which is, I think, a complete contradiction in terms. But there's some liberal think tanks out there, and I think their reason for existence is equally stupid. But anyway, in this case, it's a nice thing in the Times Herald this week, editorial, where they analyze, without taking a position, whether they're for it or against it, all the details of what the money would go for in the May sales tax. By the way, the one exemption for sales tax, other than the current one, what, for food and drugs? If you buy food and prescription drugs, there's no tax on that.
No tax, right.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, what they add, if this is passed, is there wouldn't be any tax on gasoline, no sales tax. So you don't pay right now you're paying 6% sales tax on your purchase of gasoline or diesel fuel for your cars, okay?
Still be a Fed tax, but not a sales
right.
tax.
That's right. So that's what our legislature, that's how they decided to write this, even though technically a proposal, according to our Constitution, can't be written to do several things. Like funding the schools is different than fixing the roads, in my humble opinion. But they put it all together and said, well, the one issue is just raising the sales tax. What we're going to do with the money, well, that's not the main issue.
Right.
Well, a lot of people think it is. I think it is, too. So, and I think a lot of people have already expressed that they're going to vote it down. Either because, well, first of all, number one, they don't want to pay any more money on things they buy. Number two, they don't want the money to be split up in all these different ways. Maybe they're against one purpose of it or another purpose. Everybody wants to fix the roads, and I think we want to pay for it somehow too, but a lot of people don't want to pay, and this includes, it looks like, the entire Republican Party of the state of Michigan may come out against this proposal. Because they're against all new taxes, no matter what it goes for. Well, then, since they're in the majority in legislature, why don't they get together and find a way to fix the roads then out of the money that's already there? Or, radical, find a way to tax the people that have the most money to fix the roads, okay? And they can do that now. They don't need a constitutional amendment to do that.
Oh, my God, a progressive tax rather than a regressive.
Yeah, well, our income tax can't be progressive, but they could put some other income tax. They could. No, that can't be graduated either by state constitution. So maybe a progressive tax would be, well, I think they could find it somewhere. For example, what everybody thought they were going to do was just simply raise the gas taxes, not just not the sales tax, but taxes on the sale of gas in Michigan and diesel fuel. And that would be like a user fee. So the people that buy the gas, they have to pay more because they're the ones that also use the highways. So it makes a little sense, except if a poor person needs to pay for a car to get to a job or even use a bus, they have to pay more money as a percent of their income compared to a rich person. And Kornick, why don't you just say a person that has a little more money? No, because there's a big split, folks. And it's, you look at the numbers, you're either in the top 1% or you're way down there. Okay. I mean, there's a big gap. Oh, and there's a few little bodies in between. But most of the people are not even, just barely in the so-called, what used to be called the middle class, or below. No. The so-called poverty line, and a lot more people than ever are doing really great, and they're not paying, I think, their fair share for keeping the society on an even keel or keeping the roads fixed. Anyway, we'll see what happens. See what you want to do. It is something to think about. Now, on the pro side, it's a second editorial. There's an op-ed from Tom Watkins in the Dearborn Press and Guide this week, where he talks about the anti-Proposal 1 supporters. The anti-Proposal 1 supporters insult voters. Okay, so that's, he should know better as a former state superintendent of schools. That's very confusing. But in other words, if you're against Proposal 1 and you're campaigning against it, against that state sales tax increase. He feels that you're insulting the voters because he thinks every single purpose for that money is a good purpose. And of course, as a former educator, he feels that extra money for education in Michigan is desperately needed.
Right, right.
Desperately needed right now, though. And yeah, it's always good to have money rather than not, but he thinks it's definitely will help. So he thinks altogether all the purposes in the sales tax for the sales tax increase are good. And you should read it and see about his opinions there. Again, that's the second op-ed piece that he's written on this in favor of it. It's just interesting that perhaps... and it's not decided yet, but even the pretty much Republican Michigan Chamber of Commerce, they're not sure yet if they're going to support it, the sales tax increase. The Michigan Republican Party, as I said, is pretty sure they're going to come out against it, even though the governor is for it. He'd like to fix the road some way, please, soon. We'll see what happens. Segue here. Always good in radio to have a flow of ideas from one to the other. We mentioned the state superintendent. So one of the breaking stories this week locally is that we've discovered that press release from the Dearborn Public Schools, Dearborn Public School Superintendent Brian Whiston, been on this show several times, is up for the potential post of being the new Michigan State Superintendent of Schools, Superintendent of Education, as they call it. There was like 54 applicants for the job. The present state superintendent is Mike Flanagan. He is going to be retiring, and they hope to have a new person there to take over from him July 1st of this year. And what's happened this week is that even though Whiston has said that he really doesn't want the job, he's honored that they have him on the list. Don't you have to apply? Did he just get put on the list by somebody else?
Somebody nominate you?
I don't know. Maybe they did. I don't really want the job, but I guess, you know, if you're asked to be president of the United States, maybe, you know, it's such an honor that it's hard to resist. He's one of six applicants. He's going to be interviewed next Tuesday, and the State Board of Ed, which is made up of eight people, six Democrats, two Republicans. Okay? So how liberal do you think their choice for superintendent's going to be? That's right.
Yeah.
And, of course, they say, well, the state is dominated by Republicans, so how did that happen? It's because in the election, remember in last November, those that voted for, well, of course, not everybody votes for State Board of Ed, right?
No.
But for those that voted for those positions, I guess three quarters of them were Democrats. And that's why six out of the eight are Democrats on that board. So with that majority, they always select someone to speak for them. And they have, Democratic Party views on what's good for education in Michigan. Of course, that completely conflicts with with the legislature's views and the governor's views of what's good for Michigan education. There's a lot of conflict there. And you say, well, you know, Superintendent Whiston is a strong leader here in Dearborn, then that would be good. And he has criticized the state legislature and the governor many times, both on the show and in press releases and in op-ed pieces in the local papers, for the direction they've been taking state education, both K-12 and the higher ed level, too. So, yes, I suspect that he would be a liberal or in favor of most of the Democratic policies for education and support for education in Michigan. So he has a good chance, and I suspect all six that have been asked for an interview are similar in their political philosophies of what's good for education. But he's going to be interviewed next Tuesday morning, and there's some interviews also next Wednesday, and I'm not sure when the decision will come out or whether or not he'll accept the position. He might be the top choice, but he might say no. And one reason he might say no is, I've got two stories here somewhere about this, and I might find it if I look through my papers here. First of all, Mike Flanagan, he may be sort of a lame duck, if you will, because he announced his retirement. He was reported from Michigan Radio, and that's a very good website. If you're looking for news about Michigan, They have great reporters there. Oh, yeah, it started as a radio-based service, but their website now competes with up-to-date information about Lansing and Detroit in a very objective way. Again, they're not a commercial operation, so they don't have to be beholden to advertisers. They can say what they want to say as long as it's responsible and objective, and they don't give opinions. So michiganradio.org is the website, and I've been going there regularly for a couple stories on this show, just because I don't find enough good local and Michigan-based stories in the local papers anymore. I'm sorry about that, but Press and Guide, Times Herald, pass my comments along to your upper management. Why don't you hire a full-time reporter or two or three for Dearborn and the surrounding area? Why don't you do that? Maybe you'd get more stories researched and discovered rather than just rewriting press releases. Excuse me, but I'm talking to the owners, not the people that are working there now and trying to do the best job possible. But it's unconscionable what's happened to our local weekly papers. And they say, well, we just don't have the advertising support. We just don't have the money. Well, and why do you think people are not subscribing to the paper as much? Because there's not as much real news in it. Well, also, people don't like to read. Yeah, I'm told that the younger generation would rather have it all electronically. Press and Guide has got a website, pressandguide.com, but it's not very good. And it doesn't have any more stories than the paper has, although sometimes they come out a day or two earlier than one of the papers that come out twice a week here in Dearborn by them. So I go to other places. And so one of the stories that just came out was from Mike Flanagan, as I said, and it doesn't turn up here. So it's sitting around here somewhere. Oh, well.
I don't
have what he said was, mm-hmm. is that we should stop opening any new charter schools in Michigan until we can get more proof that they're really doing a good job, until things settle down for a while. And that's great. He's the head of the Michigan Board of Education, the head education leader in the state of Michigan. But understand where that board came from and how they're positioned politically or administratively, if you will, in terms of our state structure. They don't have any power. They can only advise. They were created, unlike Board of Eds in other states, they were created to have no power except to advise and carry out the wishes of whom? Oh, the people that know education even better, the governor and the legislature. Now, so they might, well, good for Flanagan to have that statement. You know, let's stop, charter school increase until we can have more proof that they really do work, or we can really start analyzing them for accountability a little better. But it means nothing. Means nothing. His statements mean nothing. The legislature, obviously being Republicans, don't agree with that, and the governor doesn't agree with his opinions either, because they set up this EAA, Education Achievement Authority, EAA, and that was set up with, guess who's on the board? It's like three people. Two of them are Republican. Well, they're all Republicans, but two of them are big business leaders. Because if anybody knows education, it's business people. Excuse me, that's not their job, it's not their career. Excuse me, business leaders. Yes, you had to be educated somehow, but you probably hated it every minute. And don't think you know education. You didn't study for it. You're not an expert in it. You didn't look at the situations. You didn't take the classes. You didn't write the papers. You didn't read the research. So if you're mad at me, that's fine. But just know you're not. I'm more of an educational authority because I've been in education at higher ed and been in low-level administration here at Henry Ford College for a brief period, 10 years, for close to 50 years. So I'm much more an expert than almost anybody in the current state legislature. I'm more an expert on education just because of my credentials, my studies, my education, my direct connection, than the governor. Sorry, Governor Snyder, you're a great nerd, but not a nerd in terms of education and knowledge, okay? You're not an education nerd. So they wanted to go around the State Board of Ed and have control over everything, and so they knew the State Board of Ed had no power anyway. They set up the EAA to deal with, those struggling districts. Like one of our high schools in Dearborn. Was it really struggling? No, but the way they set up the criteria, yeah. Oh, my gosh, they're really terrible. They had to have extra hours last year to make up the difference. And, yeah, they need a little help. But basically, they're well-funded. It's well-taught. How could one high school be different than the other two in Dearborn? It's all funded and administered in the same way, under the same contracts and understandings and city support from the Dearborn Public Schools. It's all the same support team. So how could they be so bad off and be put in this, you know, challenged category by the EAA? Well, it's just because the EAA was stupid in the first place. And they're full of people that don't know, legislators that created them, and the three people that control that group. They've totally gone around the management, the public management of our schools. Not to mention, of course, the emergency financial managers for the schools. Detroit is on its fourth, and it's not getting any better financially there. Fourth manager of the Detroit Public Schools, they're still in financial trouble, but it's not just finances. It's academic quality. Okay, they did point out, the new manager said, well, our graduation rate has gone up a little bit. Yes, it's gone up a little bit, but guess what? Graduation rate from high schools all around the state has gone up a little bit. It's now, I think Detroit is 71% and the state average is 79%. That's still terrible throughout the whole state to me. How can more than 20% of our high school seniors not graduate from high school? How is that possible in this day and age? What in the world is going on there? Unless a few of them moved out state and they're not counted for just, you know, going to high school somewhere else. I mean, I've heard that there's some problems with the numbers about graduation, that you know, some people are actually still in school but somewhere else, and they go to Germany to finish school or something, and they're not counted here then. So we've got, my comment is, which is not necessarily that of anyone here at Henry Ford College, is that Brian Whiston, you have a lot more power and ability to influence day-to-day, real-world education right here in Dearborn. You'll be a great spokesperson for education in the state of Michigan, but you won't get anything changed or anything done there because the legislature and the governor are not going to let it happen. They're just not going to let it happen, and that's the fact. So it'll be wonderful on your resume that you were the state of Michigan school superintendent of the Board of Education, but you won't get anything done. You know, the words are nice, but on a day-to-day basis, we need you here in Dearborn. That's what I have to say on that, and thank you for your service here. I think we have one of the best districts in Michigan. A variety of criteria show that to be true, and I personally feel that you're one of the reasons, along with everybody else that helps you in your goals, in the goals that are collectively decided on. Okay, moving on. Well, look at that. Look at the time. Soapbox really takes a long time, doesn't it? It's about 20 minutes to 2 o'clock, and that means Highway 61, Joanne Kay, is coming up for 4 hours of the Best in Blues this afternoon here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You know, 30 years now on the air, and we're just getting started.
Just getting started.
John was wondering what I was pointing about.
Yeah, it was 30. Okay.
Where are the 30 years? Oh, it's a sign on the wall here we have, you know, just to remind us. Uh-huh. And in fact, let's take a little aside here. And
and we're still making waves for, during those 30 years.
Well, absolutely. Of course. Yes. Here is a special pre-recorded announcement you'll hear for the next 2 weeks on the air about a big WHFR event coming up a week from tomorrow.
WHFR and Metaphysically Speaking would like to invite you to our 7th Annual Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair on Saturday, March 21st from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Student and Culinary Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College. We have a great group of vendors, readers, and body workers for you, along with live music and a fascinating roster of speakers, plus so much more. All of this for the admission price of only $5. As a special offer, all high school and college students with current identification will be admitted absolutely free. Be sure to join us for this fantastic festival. That's Saturday, March 21st at Henry Ford College. We'll be looking for you.
So that's our WHFR-sponsored Holistic Fair, also called the Festival of Enlightenment, because you can come and learn a lot of things that, well, they're not taught in college, basically. And it doesn't mean there isn't something to them. We're not saying that. So this is merely informational and entertaining. There's a lot of vendors in the metaphysical field, that some of them selling clothing and gemstones, crystals, if you will, books and information about a variety of topics. Again, not traditional college topics, but there's a lot of people that write a lot of books, have a lot of information on these issues. And for the admission price of $5, and it is fundraising for WHFR, that's why we do this, as well as spreading information that you don't get elsewhere. You get lectures. There's going to be at least, I don't have the list in front of me, four different lectures between 11 and 5. Are those the hours?
11 to 5.
Yes, yes, thank you, John. All right, because I've got all these pieces of paper here, and I don't have that in front of me, but I think, 11 to 5. And in those 6 hours, there's 4-hour-long lectures, one at a time. And so when you're here, just go on in the special room off to the side, and it's like a little classroom meeting area, and hear a professional presentation in depth on one of the topics that might be covered. There are some people that foretell the future or can analyze your chakra, your vibes, or maybe the lines in your hand, palmistry, tarot card readers, another approach to it. Is there something in that? No, we're not saying there is or isn't, but find out more. You can wander around with the vendors and even the body workers. That means people give very kinds of massages. John, go ahead.
And one of my favorite parts of the whole fair is a neck massage. There's people,
right?
They give great neck massages. Well,
and some of them advice. Actually give demonstrations. If you want the full treatment, there's a little extra cost for that, just like the full reading of your future or your personality by one of the the people working with those tools and sensitivities and so on. There's usually some people who do Reiki too.
Yes.
Which I do every fall in my front yard. I Reiki the leaves. Okay, bad joke. Okay. Reiki is actually where you don't touch the person, where you're doing a reading about them, of their spirit and their thoughts and their possible future. You just sort of can sense it by touching their aura. Although I don't know if Reiki people that practice that actually talk about aura, but it's something like that. They can feel your field of magnetism. And some people are even, and we have a show once a month, the third Tuesday of every month, on a Tuesday forum, Metaphysically Speaking. And that's also saved as a podcast on our website, whfr.fm, where these people have a full hour of in-depth interview. And you can find out more when you listen to it that way. But there's also people that do healing. If you have a problem or a pain, they don't do a massage by touching you. They can just put their hand over you. Now, I know there's stories in the Bible about this, but they're not raising the dead here. I don't think any Reiki people can raise the dead, but they can do some healing. Find out more. It's fun, and there's all kinds of fun little things to buy, and yes, WHFR, we got some healthy food coming in. If you want a lunch or a snack, a very inexpensive price, and all the food is usually donated to us, no deer meat, for no charge, and we get to resell it for a really inexpensive price, and it's beyond the usual prepackaged junk food. It's definitely, we try to get as healthy as possible. So come and join us. You'll see most of our WHFR staff there between 11 and 5. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow, March 21st, here at Henry Ford College main campus, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. And it's in the Student Center building. So you can even peek in the windows of our WHFR studios from the large dining room and the food court area where we'll be selling the food And where there's going to be music entertainment, too. We got live performances throughout the day, sort of background music to relax you and amaze you. So it's a lot to see and do here. So come and join us. Only $5 admission. And if you buy something, that's, of course, extra. But it's all reasonable. It'll be fun for the whole family. If you're a student here at Henry Ford College or on the faculty or staff, it's free for you. See, we're giving back to our college. We're giving back here. So Holistic Fair, also called Festival of Enlightenment, information, entertainment, fun for the whole family, in fact. So come on by and join us 2 weeks from tomorrow, March 21st. Did I say May?
No.
I didn't say May before. Oh, I just said March, but I thought the first time I said it. Anyway, let's get straight here. Alrighty. Enough self-promotion. Well, you might have heard it. I'm sure it was in the national news, but it was also on the back page of a Press and Guide this last Wednesday. Michigan U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow and U.S. Rep. Candace Miller from Michigan, who just announced her retirement, by the way, after 14 years. I didn't realize she was there 14 years, but she doesn't know what she's going to do, but she's not going to run in 2016. So that's it for her. But she and so now she didn't run for re-election. She can do the stuff without worrying about political consequences. So she and Debbie Stabenow, a Democrat, have introduced a U.S. bill to try to stop Asian carp from further invasion of our Michigan lakes. And of course, it has to be passed. I think Obama would sign it, but who knows? There's a lot of pressure coming from his current friend and current mayor, Rahm Emanuel, in Chicago, that they don't want to close their beautiful little outlets.
Entryways, yes.
Well, yeah, it's entryways from for the carp to go through the rivers going through Chicago and going right into Lake Michigan. So those would be barricaded, those would be blocked off, and there's several plans for that, but that wouldn't be good for tourists, tourism necessarily, and I understand Rahm Emanuel is against that, although he may not be the mayor that much longer. He just had a runoff election, and he won, but they're going to have a runoff election because he ran in sort of a primary, but because he didn't get a majority of the votes, in spite of all the money he had to campaign with, and we're talking about huge amounts, he's going to be up against another candidate who was just introduced and interviewed in the last hour during Democracy Now! Show for today, nationally. And his first name is Jesus. Of course, I can't remember his last name. His nickname or his middle name is Chewy. I remember that.
Chewy.
But you can't call him Jesus because there's only one.
There's only one Jesus.
That's right. That's my joke anyway. But he is a man of the people, even though, interestingly, he was also in Washington, D.C. and was one advisor to the president also. So he's not exactly this man of the people, you know, directly from Chicago. He was via Washington, D.C. But, of course, he wasn't like Rahm Emanuel, who was like the number one advisor to the president. So he is the populist campaigner there, and he's close in the polls right now. It's just him and Emmanuel. Good luck to Jesus, because Emmanuel seems to a lot of people a little distant. So if Jesus gets in, and I can't remember his last name now, well, everybody following the national news, you know what it is, or you should if you listen to Democracy Now! Last hour. The point is, I bet he wouldn't mind protecting the Great Lakes just because he's a man of the people and he recognizes such things. All right, now we're on the ecology environmental front here. Michigan Radio and the Ecology Center of Ann Arbor have sent press releases out. They were applauding the Democratic Party of Michigan in Lansing for coming up with proposals to really help clean up our environment and to produce more clean energy. Clean energy, that's from wind and solar, okay? Well, guess what? Republicans, just a day or so ago, 2 days ago, came up with their proposal instead, and since they're in the majority, they can get it done, as they say, to actually go backwards, move away from even the clean energy production of wind and solar that we have now. Just a sort of a challenge or a thumbing their nose at the Democrats, because the Democrats can't get anything passed. No chance in the world that they can get their bills passed, because, you know, is clean energy and clean air and water the right things to do? Of course they are. any way we can manage to do it. And for the Republicans now, well, you can imagine the Ecology Center of Ann Arbor, and as reported by Michigan Radio too, michiganradio.org, this is unconscionable. Yes, I'm saying the Michigan Republicans don't seem to have a conscience. To move away from cleaner sources of energy, even though, yes, it costs a little money, it costs a little hassle, it makes the price of doing business go up a little bit, but it gives us a cleaner environment and more health in the long run. We have to turn the tide here, and the tide is full of floating plastic bottles like the one John is drinking out of right now. Sorry, John. Bring your mug next time.
Mug.
Okay, yeah. Okay. We'll fill it up with right from a good, healthy
tap. Here.
Yeah, WHFR tap. Mm-hmm. Delicious.
Non-filtered.
Right. So that's late breaking news. Maybe you heard about that on the reports. But now, of course, Governor Snyder, he doesn't always go along with the legislature. So he doesn't have to go backwards on this. He can just not, you know, do anything on either bill. You know, he doesn't have to sign either bill. He just lets it, what we have now, stay. That is, the wind and the solar we have now will continue in a small percentage. He could just stay with that. But we'll see what happens. No doubt the Republicans will pass that bill. They looks like they're going to pass a bill to kill the subsidy for the film industry. I've talked about this that on this show many, many times. It's not a question of who's counting the jobs created and whether they're full-time or part-time. Actually, a whole bunch of part-time jobs isn't necessarily bad, okay? If there's enough part-time jobs, the people just go from one part-time job to another. You know, most actors are part-timers in Hollywood. Most actors don't have full-time jobs. They might be signed up, let's say, for a TV series. Well, that's only 13 episodes a year. So they're not full-time. So it's interesting. Most people think of, you know, people in the film business, oh, you need to be a full-time person. No, you go from one part-time job to another. And if you set up your own, like, editing company, video editing or film editing company, it's video editing mostly today, of course, anywhere. Yeah, you're full-time trying to run that business, but your jobs come in every now and then. You know, I mean, you're not usually overflowing with jobs. There's some times when you're doing nothing, in fact, except maybe trying to go out and find some more work.
By nature, the work is finite.
That's right. You know. It's all part-time, pretty much. Even producers and so on who make the biggest salaries, of course, even more than the actors, because they get paid up front if anything makes a profit. But the producers go from one project to the next. So their money is not constant, even though each year they might get have an income, total income, that's pretty great. But it's not just from one source constantly, from one payer. That's not that way it is in the business. And as I've said, if we would have supported the film industry the way we started out under Granholm and continued with that same level of support for a few more years, which we didn't. We started cutting back several years ago. Now it's back on a little bit even keel, according to the governor's last proposal. But it's not much. It's not much to really establish permanent facilities and people expecting these part-time jobs to flow in on a regular basis. And I heard some Republican legislators talking last couple of days, podcast or wherever, about this in Michigan. And they said, oh, well, you know, since it's just part time, that doesn't really count. I think debunked that. And they've said, you know, the money just doesn't come back. Of course, it comes back in so many different ways. And they pointed out also. Well, other states are backing off on it. Yes, like New Mexico, one of the biggest producers of film and television, like Breaking Bad, was made in Albuquerque and the surroundings, to Albuquerque, New Mexico, because they put so much money in up front. They have these permanent facilities, studios built, businesses set up with part-time people in them. Okay, but they know that they're well known and well respected. They have a reputation now after 20 years. Of doing good work for Hollywood. And so the state has been able to back off slowly on the money, the credits that it gives to productions that come in. And that's the way it could be in Michigan. So if you don't put that money up front, and we really haven't yet, because we backed off and we almost stopped for a while, you can't stop and start. So, yeah, I think either do it right or don't do it at all, and it would be a shame to miss this opportunity. But we've got to get back on track, and what's proposed even right now by the governor is not enough to get us back on track, and we'd have to keep higher funding for another 5 years, in my humble opinion, and the other people that know the film and video business in Michigan. And I have many contacts in those industries to know that what I'm saying is their opinion too, the people that know best. So it'd be a shame if the Republicans get their way here because they don't understand either anything about this business or this industry and how good it can be for Michigan if it's once set up. 2 minutes, John.
Okay.
You want to do the last 2 minutes? Did I give you something to talk about in the last 2 minutes?
Well, I have a couple things that I could bring out.
Good.
One is Autorama is this weekend at Cobo Hall throughout Friday and Saturday.
And how is Autorama different from the Detroit Auto Show, as I call it?
It is, I would say, more muscle cars and more newer models.
Custom-type
vehicles as well. It should be a good weekend to
explain to me the personal appearances of all the wrestlers. Is that because of the muscle cars?
It must be the
connection. And they're muscle-bound people?
Muscle-bound people.
I can never figure that out. Why is all these wrestlers at Autorama?
They seem to be very well associated with it, yes.
Yeah, it's just one and the same. Okay,
yeah, okay.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Oh, yeah.
Also, and Joanne's going to do it, today at the Arab American National Museum right here in Dearborn, they're having the opening today, opening reception, in fact, for a new exhibit there called Detroit to Baghdad, El Mutanabi Street starts here. And it shows a little bit of what happens in Baghdad on the Al Mutanabi Street. And they'll be giving refreshments and even reading by an award-winning Iraqi-American poet, Dunya Mikal. But it says an RSVP is strongly suggested for that free opening reception, I guess, so they have enough food and beverages, snacks for people, you know, for that. A little bit later, though, well, at the same time, but a little bit later, there's going to be a performance, a first performance of their Global Friday music season. And tonight at 7:30 p.m., it'll be Safafir, Iraqi Maqam. Okay, it looks like a trio, folks, and my apologies here. Members of Safafir, says get up close and personal with classical Arabic musicians, and they'll be performing tonight at 7:30 p.m. in concert. Something different to do, folks. This is great. And if you're interested and you've already paid for admission to the concert, which is $20, general admission, or if you're a member of the Arab American National Museum, which is a great idea, you get a little discount. It's $15. That's for both the workshop, the artist workshop at 5:30, and the concert at 7:30. Now, if you just want to go to the concert, it's $10 for the AANM members or $15 general admission. And, of course, we're happy to mention these concerts because world music, it's the music of all of us. And we don't get enough exposure to it here in Dearborn, even with the resources from the Arab American National Museum. We're very happy to work with them and the, of course, the group Access as they present the Concert of Colors.